Hi, what's up? Welcome back to our podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Peter Kim.
And I'm your other host, Eunji Kim. Welcome to our podcast, Peter. Welcome to our
We took a week podcast. Off. Podcast. What do we do? What is this? We took a week off and we're like, how do we do this again? Welcome back to Two Kims, One Pod.
Welcome to our podcast.
Podcast. I know. We took a week off and I have no idea what the fuck we're doing. I'm like, how do we even do this? Anyway.
The question mark at the end of that was just.
Is it a podcast? What actually do we do here? Welcome back to two comedians talking shit. If you're new to the podcast, Eunji Kim and Peter Kim, we're both hosts of this podcast. We're also comedians. We're also Koreans. We're also queer. We're also angry, bitter.
I think
petty.
That's implied in the Korean. Yeah.
Yeah. But not soft spoken, or do we really care about holding any kind of integrity in our work? So a lot of that is not Korean as well. So, you know, we're breaking boundaries here.
Defying stereotypes and also lifting them up.
Embodying them. How are you? How's it going?
It's going well. You know, this reminds me of, like, I used to wonder, like, Peter, don't you think it's so funny that, like, there's such a stereotype about Asian women being, like, submissive and demure?
Yeah. I mean, that still rings true to me.
Does it?
For most Asians I know.
They're submissive and demure?
I don't know about submissive, but more quiet than loud.
I mean, every single Asian girl I know is like the meanest fucking person I've ever met. So
out loud?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Maybe only to my face?
You do have a face for that. No, I mean, it's interesting. Like, all the Asians I meet in LA. Okay, let me step that back. Mm-hmm. All the non-Koreans I meet in LA are very sweet. They lead with sweet.
Okay.
And nice and hi, you know, like,
sure,
personable. But the Koreans I know tend to be like, huh? You know, like, just.
That's out.
Oh, oh. Oh.
That's out.
I did a show with Susan Song,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
last night. If you guys don't know her, she's one of my friends. She's a sketch comedian. I'm trying to push her into stand-up, but we'll see what happens. She's a JFL character, new face,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so she does the show last night. This bitch has, like, it's a show called Oral, and which means, like, just everyone's doing something out of their mouth, either singing or sure, stand-up or storytelling, etc. Mm-hmm. She does characters, and this bitch brings in, like, 95 tech cues. It all went off without a hitch, but I'm like, damn, bitch, the most extra ass, like, of course, the only other Korean on the show, going, like, full oba. Shout out to Susan. Anyway, why did you ask that?
Oh, just because we were talking about stereotypes and stuff. And I just heard someone talking about it, like, on a podcast about, like, oh, this is the reason why. Because there's a lot of, like, guys on, I don't know how to describe it, but, like, it's a section of TikTok that is very specifically about passport guys that go abroad to find mates and bring them back. They're called, like, it's like a genre. It's like passport bros or something. And yeah, I'm telling you, I go to really dark places of TikTok because of my incel algorithm.
Yeah. Why do you have that still? I thought you, like, a couple of weeks ago, you were like, I'm figuring my algorithm. I'm, like, unliking things that I don't want to see. And clearly you have not. Clearly the incel algo is strong with that one. What is it? What are you viewing, Alex Jones?
Like,
why are you? Why? You don't have to heart Alex Jones. You could just watch it.
But that already, even if I don't heart it, if I watch it, it brings it back around.
It brings
and it
back,
is
yeah,
like something about it, like pushing a bruise. And there is definitely a part of that. And also, it is very fascinating. Like, at the same time, I was also on, like, Islamic fundamentalist TikTok as well. Like, it's...
Incels and infidels. You're just lucky that you've got a brand.
Check out my Patreon. Incels and infidels. where a queer Korean lady goes off.
on woke culture.
And now we all need to go back to the kitchens. Women need to be in the home. It's I think honestly it's just such an interesting philosophy and ideology that they are holding true to, right? I think I honestly in my own mind think that it's their allegiance and utmost devotion to an ideology that is very appealing to me. Like anybody that's hyper religious as well, like there's something about it that is appealing to you because they have this
passion
and ideological integrity that as a sort of democratic agnostic person, you know, I'm willing to go with things. I'm typically thinking critically, but I'm kind of like, well, what's the big deal? I don't have any like strong allegiance to an idea. I'm not committed in that way. It would never occur to me to be so devoted.
You're devoid of hills to die on.
I mean,
you're looking for a hill.
I'm looking for it. And I like watching people on hills. That's it. That's absolutely it. Yeah. Because like for me, and we've talked about this, like
you love a knoll.
I want the Shire, you know, like I, because truly like, I mean, we've talked about this, like absent religion and these sort of ideological allegiances, because we're both passionate people. I think that's why people have started to find these sort of bastions of ideological integrity and like hills to die on in sort of bizarre places, because we don't have it in most anything else. Because again, I mean, politically, ideologically, I'm not holding true to anything in any real way. Aside from critical thinking and logic, which I do have a ideological allegiance to strongly. But I mean, outside of that, like, I don't know.
Yeah, what's that worth? I wonder if you're looking for, are you looking for like a community?
No, because perhaps, I mean, like... You think I'm gonna go to this like Islamic fundamentalist dude's house?
No. Yeah. Not that specifically, but kind of writ large. Maybe you're feeling a sense of like isolation or like not a connectedness, and then you see these people, whether fundamentalists or not, they're within a community of people who also think like them or feel passionate about something.
I mean, don't you think that we kind of have that with comedy?
I find calling comedy a community to be antithetical. Because I find comedy to be so lonely. Like, we're coworkers.
Sure.
But that does not make a community. You know what I mean? It's like if you go to work every day at an office, yeah, you have your coworkers, you hang out with them every day, you like have meetings with them, maybe you'll have lunch. Is that your community? It's just kind of what you do. And you like play nice with people. I mean, you have real friends.
Sure, yeah. But I think it goes beyond. I think there are people in the community that are certainly coworkers, and it is a workplace for sure, to be sure.
Yeah.
But I also think that when I describe community, there is such a deep shorthand to comics in any green room. Any era of like wherever you are on the timeline of comic, like you can get into a green room and kind of like
I think that's more, I mean, I guess it's one in the same, because like if you're I'm trying to think of like people who are also like solo specialists,
who might
like feel each other that way in that like in that shorthand kind of way.
Plumbers, you know, electricians, like they I mean,
but rarely are seven plumbers in a room together doing the same job. You know what I mean? Like it's, you're doing,
I mean, you're like not watching the content I'm watching.
those incels really be fucking plumbing, getting the plumbing all fucked up with their with their bullshit.
They're laying pipe, Peter.
Maybe that's something. Maybe that's something I'm just projecting because I'm feeling like I want a little bit of community, and I don't. It's hard for me to like establish one or like find one outside of my like close friends that like we always hang out or whatever. That's great. I love having like a friend group, which is awesome. But like sometimes I miss that like going to church without the bullshit, you know, like having a steady place to go every week and knowing that you'll see the same faces, whether you actually have a conversation with them or not, doesn't matter. But there's a comfort of this go, come and go. With ease, talk about passport, you know, like a place where I belong that I can walk in and out of and be part of. I miss that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
miss
that
a lot of it, actually.
I mean, that was IO. Yeah.
That was IO. And you guys recently left a temple to go find a Buddhist thing, right? So, like, and I know, like, Buddhists don't really hang like that. You know, like, Buddhists are also. At least, like, the Buddhist temples, like, my family used to try to go to, there wasn't much of a fellowship happening.
This is, like, this the Buddhasa in Chicago is trying to do that. And it was nice. Okay. Like, and the kids and the school, because they have a Korean school, they're going to foster that a little more. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, I went, and I liked it. I liked it in a way that I remembered the feeling. And it was like it's clearly grown. I don't know how. Like it has to be like a rich white guy, right? Like giving these people money because how is the Buddhasa growing? How do they have a different building now?
Oh no!
You know what I mean?
Do it? Is this like a nefarious thing? You think?
I don't know. I don't think I can't imagine that it is. I mean, you know, because the thing is, if you've ever met real Buddhists, right? Like real. Like, it's particularly, monks. I only know Korean Buddhists. I'm not talking about, like, Richard Gere Buddhists. I'm talking about there's, like, actual Korean Buddhists. They are very frank, very straightforward, like, very no-nonsense. Like, it is, like, the distillation of, like, a kind of Korean energy in a way that's very comforting. Because it's a version of Koreanness, right? This bluntness, this terseness, and no-nonsenseness. But in contemporary Korean culture, it's ensconced in all this like capitalism and bravura and like conspicuous consumption. So imagine that without any of those trappings. It's like very, it's almost Midwestern.
How like, do you judge each other? How do you like you hold don't. Status over one another?
Exactly. And it's just
what?
Very,
what?
That's what I mean. It's like, it's very. It's very.
How do you know you're a better Buddhist?
You don't. There is no nothing.
That's
like that.
That's unsettling to me. It's unsettling to me.
That's what I mean.
I need to know where I am in the pecking order.
And that's the thing is that just only on you. Like it's very.
Oh my god! I think this might be too healthy for me.
Yeah. No. It's that sort of what it is. Like if you've ever been in the presence of someone that like really doesn't care about your opinion. It's very solid in their own, and yet they are extremely polite, not self-serving, but like gracious, and also no nonsense. I've only been in presence of like those are like what I'm describing is truly like the couple of Korean Buddhists I've ever known. Mm-hmm. My psychiatrist when I was 17, like truly, like changed my life kind of guy. And this lady and then one of the monks when I was very young. It is disorienting because you realize how fucked up all of our internal compasses are. Because these people are truly pointing north and you realize you're just spinning. You know what
I'm
I mean?
I'm just like, realizing just... that the only Buddhist that was really present in my life was this one guy we used to call Sunim.
Yeah.
Which means monk.
Yeah.
Did not specify his name whatsoever. We just called him Monk. Yeah. And he would come over to our house every weekend. And sometimes he would come over in his like monk garb.
Yeah.
But oftentimes not. Mm-hmm. And he was bald and he would come over and smoke like an entire carton of cigarettes, get fucked up on soju, and go gambling.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah, so it was a type of Buddhism that to me was like, not this what you're talking about. It was very capitalistic, very consumption oriented. And now I'm thinking back and I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense why like I didn't go towards Buddhism or whatever. Like I still have, I don't like, I think of it as like similar to Christianity because like he was acting like just like another deacon at my church. Kind of, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Same, same.
And there are things like, yeah. There are Buddhist monks that are definitely like that. I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. But you're not supposed to like want things.
Yeah.
That's like a major thing of that, like nirvana, of like the detachment release. The desire is what equals pain, et cetera, you know, and whatever. But
I mean, there's supposed to be entire Buddhist temples in certain parts of Southeast Asia that are like making meth. So, I mean,
oh,
I'm just saying, like, it's just because it's Buddhism.
That's how you grow.
I'm just saying, like, you know what I mean? Like, Buddhism is just like any other sort of
any other
gathering
religion.
Gathering of humans that create a hierarchy. There will be flaws. There are people.
Right.
It's going to be fallible.
But,
like, for me, in my experience, particularly maybe in Chicago and the people, because all the monks at my... Because my grandmother was like that. My grandmother, very, I don't know, whatever version of devout you can be in Buddhism, but she was like a devout Buddhist. Her name was Martong, right? Her parents were
Martong,
like Buddhist.
Horseshit?
Yeah. Like if you're not familiar.
Why would you name someone, a daughter that?
Because, like,
or was that her taken name? Did she change her name?
No, because it's like, because in Buddhism, like, if you humble yourself like that, that's supposed to help you humble yourself and make you, like,
God.
Yeah. I mean, that's how devout, Lord. Like, that's how Buddhist this shit was, right? And my grandmother gambled. Like, all the most lively hatto games I've ever seen are with her and all the old harmonies in her building.
Yeah,
smoked
exactly.
Consistently, drank, was like a moonshiner. In Japan, like you know what I mean, had flexible morals, but that was, I mean, that's a Buddhist is a Buddha. That's what I mean. It's like white. I see Buddhism as like, you know, I see it for all of its
yeah,
things.
Yeah, there are like corrupt Christians and non-corrupt
absolutely.
Christians. Yeah,
but at this protesta, the lady, it's like it's that sort of frank energy, you know. But very Christian Koreans are like this too.
Mm.
Like the ones that don't care.
I haven't met much. The only Christian Koreans I know are the bad ones.
Okay. No, I've met a few.
The
like,
Lexus
very,
Koreans.
Yes. No, I don't. Yeah. I've known a few like Chevrolet Koreans. Chevrolet Christians. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they have the same energy. Like it's like a, if you can imagine a lady that is very like Shikshikan, but like without the Lexus and this like bravura. Like she's like amped for life and connection. And for truth and honesty and all that stuff, but not the bullshit. It's
wow. This is like foreign to me. This type.
Yeah, it's very refreshing.
Yeah,
it's very refreshing.
Yeah. I would stay. Yeah.
I know. Can you imagine because my son ran into the protesta, like ripped off his shoes, flung it into a cubby because it's all these kids' shoes at the door, right?
Mm-hmm.
Going into because it's like. And then just hearing him and everyone in this room be like, Saul! Like, and as a teacher, you know what I mean? Like,
that's
so
sweet.
He didn't even look back.
Oh,
just ran
wow.
straight to the room.
That's
he
incredible.
Likes it. He likes
oh,
it.
Oh, that's great.
And
that's
it's all interracial kids, by the way.
Are you meeting any parents that you like?
I mean, every parent is dropping off and running away.
Oh, really? Okay, so there's not a
so
lot
the
of
kids
like,
are the kids are creating a community. I think the parents are kind of like, because I'd imagine it's mostly because it's either Koreans that want to get out of the Catholic or like the Christian Korean rat race. Because it's interracial.
Do you, as an adult now, do you have any pull towards like wanting to make more like adult Korean friends?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
I do.
Yeah. I've been having that pull lately. Like I look around a lot and I realize like how little and this goes back to our like early conversation about community, like how little Korean community I have and how much I had growing up. And I took that for granted, you know? And even worse than that, I really like was ashamed of it, you know, because of all the like bad parts of being in a community. And I didn't like
and the trauma.
I chose not. Well, yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I really didn't give much time to looking at the good parts of it, you know, because I didn't have, again, because of trauma, like you just don't have the wherewithal to like concentrate on the good stuff or even like conjure it up in your mind. So these days as an adult in my 40s, I'm like really starting to, and I unfortunately, I only have access to other Koreans in entertainment.
This is the problem.
The worst type of Koreans, right? So like, not the worst type of Koreans, worst type of people in general, you know, like coming and speaking from the inside, you know, like I'm looking for these like just normal Koreans that like are not involved in entertainment or comedy or, you know, in media, whatever. Like, but I find it hard without that church aspect or temple or whatever, without that being like a communal space that I attend. It's very difficult to like seek out adult Koreans.
I mean, it's just hard. Like, it's hard for adult friends, period.
Well, yes, for sure. Especially if it's not through work.
Exactly. So, yeah. I mean, and that's why the entertainment thing is kind of happening. But it is, I think adult friends are very hard. I will say that, like, you know, because both of us made a conscious choice to leave that community behind in order to save ourselves. And live a version of ourselves authentically and out loud.
Yeah.
Which we could not do inside
within
of that community.
That, yeah.
So I think that's why it's like we weren't just ashamed. It had to be a conscious like casting away.
A divorce.
A divorce.
Yes, exactly.
And we didn't get any children.
I wonder if
we didn't get custody.
Like... No. We were the mom who were like, fuck it, I need to look out for me. And drove all the way down to Tampa.
That life's that. I know. I don't know that life. Anymore. I mean, like, it is. It's like because we don't. Because even the trying to find our way back to that community means that, like, you don't want to have a relationship with those people that were a part of that trauma, right? Even if they are divorced from it now, even if they are not actively engaged in that sort of. You know,
right?
But they're a
You're
part of
like,
that memory.
I know. Well, that you know, it's interesting you bring that up because the other day I saw a comment on one of my videos, and it was from a friend from high school. Yes, and she and I follow each other on Instagram, etc. But from junior high, actually, but we don't like. Actually correspond. It's like kind of like Facebook where you're just like, oh, I know you, friend.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whatever. Uh-huh. But she wrote on my on the comment like, hey, when are you coming to New York? I would love to see you live. And it just like really, and you know, you and I were in New York last summer.
Yeah.
And you met my friends. Those are the friends that I like continue to foster relationships with, right? After I completely divorced myself and, you know, figured out who I was, what I wanted to say, et cetera, without that baggage. So in a bad way, this girl is part of the baggage, not from her fault at all, but just being in the like cohort of my high school, you know? So like, it was weird when I saw her comment, I was like, almost
triggered?
Like a sting, a little trigger, not like to the point where I'm like, you know, but like a little kind of like, why does this not feel great? You know what I mean? Like it should on paper. I'm 42. We're all 42. You know, we're all, you know, same age. So like we've all done our own individual work, et cetera. But why did that comment, which is not just innocuous, it's positive. Why did that feel not totally positive to me? And it just really made me go back and think like, what am I still harboring a lot of this hurt? And am I still like protecting my heart? Clearly I am, because her comment made me feel like a way about it.
I've experienced this, and I've realized that I actually initially thought what you are saying, where it's like, it's, am I still angry at this person or this time? And it's really, for me personally, Peter, I'm embarrassed of who I was. Like, I'm embarrassed of the version of me that they knew.
That they knew.
And so, like, when they pop up, and they pop up and they see this version of you.
Yeah.
You, like, that, for me, it's like, it was triggering insofar as, like, I was like, I wonder if they think that I'm that version. I don't want them to see. I want them to know, like, I'm different now.
I'm better.
Like, I'm better. Like, I. Yeah. And you can't have that conversation.
I hate that
Oji
too.
Yeah. She fucking sucked. Like, do you want to talk shit about it? Like, I.
Let's push her to the locker. Yeah, I get it.
Like, that is the part that's triggering. Like, you're remembering.
Maybe that's what it is for me,
too. The version of you that they knew.
And the version of me that they knew, you know, I think it's false to say that that wasn't me. That
sure.
was.
Yeah.
Was I? And also high school girl, like how many of us actually know who the fuck we are? We're like trying stuff on, you know, like all of high school is you in the Gap dressing room with too many clothes.
Trying them on. Trying it on.
Yeah. And then feeling fat, feeling ugly. Oh, is this cute? Immediately,
oh my
no.
God.
You know, like, it's just
this,
like.
Oh, my God. This gray Hawaiian shirt that I stole from Gap.
No.
That was like my identity.
A gray Hawaiian shirt. Why? Defeats all purpose of a Hawaiian shirt.
The background was gray, and it was a loud Hawaiian print. When I tell you, this shit was my personality.
Wow.
Wow, this Hawaiian shirt girl.
What was my personality? My personality was North Face book bag with I had two personalities. It was like the fangsta with the dyed hair, bangs, and the leather jacket, you know, AZM classic.
I know. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then it was the prepster.
Uh-huh.
North Face jacket, Tommy Hilfiger.
Sure. Arguably the
Nautica.
Same. Arguably the same Asian gangster classic. Like, that's the Asian gangster classic.
It is, but it's giving a day versus night.
Yeah. In honor of Fashion Week.
And then there was that part who was, like, desperately trying to be at Bible study and revival because... That's where all the cool kids were. That's where all the youngs were.
Sure.
All the girls, the nunas. You know, that was where you hung out. You know,
it's a third space. It's a state sanctioned third
free.
Space. Yeah, it's
free,
a state sanctioned free a third space that is free. That is adults know you can go there. It's safe, but you're still congregating, and you're basically the setting is just as irrelevant as, like, it's the mall. Like, you could be there, you could be church.
It's just
the
hang space.
It's a hang space. It's so important.
And
it's so
you're
important.
Right. It is where you can tell your parents you're going to and they won't ask another question.
Yes.
Because they're like, wow, look at my kid going to Friday night service. Meanwhile, we're going in late because we're smoking an entire pack of Newport Lights.
Newports, yes.
Pray.
The most Newports I've ever smoked was at, like, a fucking, what is it, lock-in or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's like bad Opa was just like, he must have brought a carton because everyone just got smoking from this guy. It was smoking this guy's Newports. But
yeah,
I think his parents for sure had like a store.
Oh, that's so cool. Kids with stores, kids with parents who had stores were like the richest, coolest kids, I remember.
Yeah,
like they could get
product.
You anything.
Yeah,
yeah,
the product.
And if you had like
jacket.
Porn...
if you had a store, yeah, like that's carried porn, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God, that was it. This guy, one guy, Scotty Hewlin, who had, I think his dad owned a bodega or one of those like stores with a magazine rack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they had in the back of the magazine rack were the ones that were plastic wrapped. I don't know if they still do this, where like it's hidden from like eye view, but like if you reach back there, you can see like It's like the Playgirl. Well, yes. I was looking for the Playgirl.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And no one ever had Playgirl. It was always, it was, so annoying. Like, and then I would, I don't know if you looked at like chapchi porn, like magazine porn back in the day. You didn't?
No.
You and your friends? I guess girls really didn't back then. They were not, even girls wouldn't even talk about like hooking up, or it was very like,
I mean, I being catfished. Crude, I
being
catfished
crude was
and
a
like,
thing.
But now I catfished and then would engage in like sexy chat in rooms.
Chat rooms, yes, I would.
Chat rooms. I was doing chat rooms and like catfishing people. I was not doing. I didn't need to use. I didn't need to use porn. I was using my imagination and my emotional manipulation to create the scenarios that I would jerk off to later.
Oh my god. What's it called? So this week I should we get into our tops and bottoms? Let's do it.
Alright, okay, yes.
Yeah.
We haven't even done that yet.
Yeah, no, we've just been catching up for half an hour. But okay, so my top this week, I'm back into stand up, the grind.
Oh yeah, how was the
I told you that I took a break and it was hard to get back.
Yes.
Yeah. And then did I tell you about TCU?
We have not.
Oh my god,
yet
we haven't talked
about
in so
it.
Long.
Yes.
Okay, so it was
saying,
right before I went to TCU.
Yeah.
I know a lot's happened. So TCU is Texas Christian University. I went to this college gig in Fort Worth, Texas, and let me tell you, I flew into Dallas and I had to drive to Fort Worth, which is like an hour and a half away.
Okay,
and the Texas highway system is fucking bonkers. Like, I thought LA was bad.
Mm-hmm.
Texas is like all mega highways. And it's like people are going 80. And there are these like, what are those HOV lines? Like the express lines?
Yeah, yeah.
Lanes. But they're like, they have this thing where maybe I'm just a Luddite, but like, they have these like cameras and flashes where they like check your car for like if you have the HOV ticket or whatever. So like you're going on this express lane for like an hour and you're like constantly getting photographed while you're going down. And I'm just like, for a state that's all about like liberty and freedom, like you're really being tracked throughout
surveillance
your fucking interstate.
Surveillance state.
Exactly. I'm like,
so it's a lie that all of us are telling ourselves. If you don't think people are watching.
Girl,
wake
please.
Up.
Girl, please.
Wake up.
You know how, okay, so you reposted, just a quick tangent. You reposted something on TikTok the other day about like how the Chinese MMS or their like CIA is like the strongest, most like intellectual possible because every single four billion Chinese phone is basically able to be tapped and used.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like basically everywhere all around China. And some they were saying like, so that's like what you have to realize that like China's able to do. And I'm like, we do that here. We just like call it spectrum. You know what I mean? Like it's not like it's not happening here. We just like market it better and lie to it. You know what I mean? Like China just doesn't lie.
I showed my husband this and he looked at me and was like, Sinophobic much? And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, Kim, like this is like fucking crazy. Like this is when I am a little being brain rot by the incel stuff because he's, you know, he's at a different part of the same end of the spectrum as I am for sure. But he's like, he was just like, this is very Sinophobic and like toxic and problematic.
I don't doubt that because we have that in us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We are biased against the Chinese and Japanese, but that's
it's crazy
cultural. Okay. Like that's most of that is cultural that, you know, like,
but I mean like even in America,
it's learned behavior.
It's about stuff about like surveillance and like for sure because you're right
traffic
cams, in America,
like
we're,
we're being tracked everywhere, like
I mean,
don't even for a second think that we're quote free, none of us
also in the I think the UK is actually the most surveilled country in the world. Like there is very few parts of like public
it's a
life
tiny country too,
so that's why the CCTV is everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, you, there's very little public space in London that is not being surveilled. So, like, if you're walking outside of your private home, you're being watched.
You're being,
like, same with South Korea, because it's small. So, every single, there's so many.
They're able to cover it. Yeah. Well, that's what Texas kind of felt like, oddly enough. But it's such a big state, but, like, the highways are, like, tracked the entire time.
For sure.
Anyway, so I first had, like, a... You know, I will say I was a little biased against going to somewhere called Texas Christian University. I'm very loudly gay and, you know,
unapologetic
and loud and non-Christian. And, you know, oftentimes I'm mocking religion, especially Christianity. But so I was like, this is not going to be a good fit. But I got there and I got to say, it was the... Most there was 500 I don't want to say kids students there, and they were
they're kids
they were the most diverse populace I've ever seen in my life. It literally, like, I commented on how, like, suspiciously diverse it was. I was like, did you, like, recruit people of color to come out to this show? Like, what is happening? There was even a kid in a chair in the front, like one of those chairs that you blow into a straw to move around, you know, like he was fully what do you call paraplegic or quadriplegic, like where you can't move anything. He's quadriplegic, right? So he's in this, like, one of those kind of like chairs with the big shocks on them, so he could like roam it around campus. And I'm literally, like, just kind of like scanning the audience, and I see him and I just go absolutely in on this kid.
And how Peter, you
not necessarily like making fun of him, but completely
not necessarily
I am making fun of him, but in a, not that you're fucking quad, not like that, but the fact that he's there and that adding to, like, how diverse the campus looks, like,
I
something's fucking happening.
You know
what I mean? Like, you didn't have to go, you didn't have to fucking add the chair, dude. Like, I get it. Like, you all, y'all are
was he a person of color?
He was white. But he was dying, and his mom and I just kept going into him about how, you know, I asked, he's 21, he was a virgin, so I was like, someone's got to suck his huge dick right now. You can tell, like, don't let the chair fool you. He's packing heat, you know, like, anyway, so, like, I just really went in on fucking ribbing him a little bit.
Sure.
And also celebrating his giant cock. And the audience lost it. They were
of course, because
he was sitting front row.
Yeah.
And he came up to me after the show and his mom, and his mom came up to me and was like, hey, Josh wants to take a picture with you. And I was like, absolutely. And she was like, I just want to say thank you for making fun of him.
Yeah.
Because he was so afraid coming here tonight that everyone was going to ignore him. And people usually do, because they are just so uneasy around him that they would just rather he be invisible than to actually say something to him and acknowledge him being there. And you just acknowledging him right at the top and, like, going in on him, like, it really made his night. And that really, like, touched me. I was like, oh my God, wow, that's incredible. And then he says, can I take a picture? And we take a picture, and he goes, I have a new fear now. And I was like, what? He goes, chubby Gaysians. And I gave him a high five. I mean, he wasn't able to high five, but, like, I high fived this straw and he rolled along, and it was really fun. And it was just such a good time that, like, man, I really did fuck up by judging TCU by its cover.
Yeah.
I really did. And it was my first college gig, opening for Preacher Lawson. It was so fun. I would love to do more college gigs. I thought it was, even though it was an in and out, I just stayed one night and came back right on the red eye. But it was worth it. It was fun. I did 20. Easy breezy. It was
the
great.
The dream.
Yeah.
Surely.
So stand-up's been cool. I've been getting back into the swing of things, writing new material, and
But also, can I just say that the moment where you're describing like how most people like just ignore him, that really like resonated, because it is kind of how people treat like the unhoused too, like just ignore because it's uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah, I did. When you were talking about it, I was like, right, that is kind of the worst thing. And especially if you're someone that you must notice it so often.
Right. It's such a like quiet pain because like literally no one's acknowledging you. So there's no like active bashing or whatever. But it's actually like anyone who's been to high school knows that being ignored is probably like the most hurtful thing, or not being like included or whatever.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it is the most polite crime. Like, it is the most polite way of dismissing someone's existence. And
yeah.
Yeah. Because it feels, because it's like the implied pity of it, I guess, maybe. I don't know. It's that fucking really got me. But anyway, so you were there.
Sorry.
So yeah, then you want to do more things. You're in the swing of stand up. You're back. How often are you doing shows right now?
Pretty often. I'm going out like about three times a week. Three.
Wow, eight. Peter, that's like pre pandemic levels.
I know. It's back. I'm back, and it's been fun again, which is great. You know, okay. And every time I take a break, I'm like, ugh, trudging through the mud. But I just like I remember how fun it is to fucking go out there and write new stuff, and it's just like. It's invigorating. It's great.
There's nothing.
Speaking
quite
of
like
new
it.
Stuff, no. I did my fourth CBS showcase, diversity showcase. if you guys don't know, CBS, Viacom, Paramount, whatever the fuck the company's called now, they do a diversity comedy showcase every year, and this year they weren't able to cast because of the double strikes last year, so they asked. A handful of the alumni who also do stand-up to come back and do a night of stand-up, like a stand-up showcase. We were only doing like 5 minutes, but not really. Everyone went over. But we all we were all like trying to figure out like, oh, what's the right five? What's the right five? And I was like, no five I'm going to like put together is going to like excite me, you know? So I wrote a new bit that morning and did it. And it crushed.
Yeah.
And I was so happy that it did well. I knew it was going to do well because I was laughing at it when I wrote it. And I was like, oh, that's a sign that it's going to do well. You know how you kind of know? Like, you know your own, like, rhythm. You know your own voice. So you know, like, okay, this is going to get a laugh. I'm going to get a laugh on this setup. And then I'm going to punch it with this. So, like, you kind of have a shape of, like, how your thing's going to go. It might not go, like... 100%, but like 85%, you kind of know when you like try stuff out, like, or 85% of the time, you know, like you don't have it yet or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
You just, yeah, you kind of have like a feeling of your thing now. Anyway, so like I had like a decent feeling of it, but I was really surprised that it went better than I expected. So that was nice.
Well, part of it is because especially I will say this, Peter, this is the conceit of an improviser is that some of it is that it's new. So it's the
100%.
Delivery, your enthusiasm behind
yes.
it. Like,
yes.
like what's the set look like after the 100th time you've done that same five?
Bad. Because I'm not into it.
Exactly.
That's why. That's, yeah. Exactly. And I know that. Yeah.
I mean, that is part of it where, like, I have to remember, because there'll be shit where I'm like, oh, this killed in a set. And it'll be new stuff. And it's because the way I'm saying it, I'm excited about it.
Right.
Like, oh, you're not going to believe this thing. And the audience believes me. They're like, yeah, I don't believe that. I can't believe that. And then every single time after that, there's diminishing, 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 diminishing.
Of course. Yeah.
And this is lately when I've really, I understand the hour. Like why that special, why this like being able to tour consistently with an hour and having that, it's getting to be a lost art. a lost skill because everyone is doing so much crowd work. Everyone is doing all these like spontaneous live things. It's this weird transmorphication of both improv and stand-up right now that's going on tour.
Yeah, I wonder if the hour will go away. And I hope it does, because I think the hour as a special, yeah, not as like a headlining hour, but as a special, mm-hmm, feels random. You know what I mean? Like half hour, an hour, it's based on TV. Like that guideline. It's 22 minutes plus commercials, 8 minutes of commercials. So it's like, now that we don't have that, really, I wonder if the hour will stay. And this, I'm talking about this after I watched a bunch of specials lately, including Michelle Wolf's, which I really enjoyed her, the way she broke it up into three 20-minute things. Yes. That felt more like how we ingest comedy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Especially with this like rise of more extemporaneous type of live stage stuff that people want to put on Instagram for like clips and stuff. Like, it seems like the attention span's getting shorter anyway, so maybe that hour will start whittling down. But
don't you think?
Well,
like
anyway,
a,
whatever.
Don't you think that's such like a, I don't know, that's like
a detriment.
There's like a level of defeatist. Like, well, we're all gonna get fucking dumb anyway, so let's just feed this beast and everyone's attention span. Because the part of her calculus behind
it's just evolution, I think. It's just like an evolution of the art, not like
a devolution
on it. I mean, I guess it could be anything could be looked at in those both ways, you know, like but yeah, well, here's why I also say this, because this goes to kind of the bottom, is during the showcase, our host was Al Madrigal.
Yeah.
Okay. Wonderful comic. You know, he's been around forever. He tells us, like, don't worry about the clock. Like, you know, don't go crazy, but, like, just do what you do. And we're like, okay. And he goes, you know, I say this because I've done, like, a bunch of late night sets, and they never go well. And they're never clippable. He was like, and it's because like I'm just not that type of comic. I'm usually going into like longer story sets, mm-hmm, and that's hard to like clip up or do a concise five of,
yeah,
like a network five, like a late night five, because it's not inherently set up punch tag tag punch or whatever. You know, like he's doing more of an elongated thing. And I was like, oh, I guess that makes sense. You know, like we all have different styles. And then he goes on stage and hosts and does a long story, which is his style.
Yeah.
But it went great.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I think it could have been better? 100%. And he's falling on the sword. In front of an industry crowd of like 300 people.
Of course.
Industry crowd, painstakingly not great crowds, tight, you know? Anyway, so he does his set. Da, 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 da. It kind of like sets up for a while, punch, 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 blah, blah, and then big pop at the end, right? So he comes off stage, and I see him coming off stage, and he gives me one of these looks like this, right?
Yeah.
And me trying to make him feel better, I go up to him and I go, what? Huge pop at the end. And he goes, really? Huge pop at the end? And I go, I mean, they're tight. I'm trying to like console him, but like it's coming off really pedantic and like just not cool, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And it just really, like, I didn't know what to say because he caught eyes with me. I should have just given him a fist pound and move on.
Sure.
And not fucking said anything.
Yeah.
But I was trying to, like, make him feel better. And now I'm thinking, like, what do I need to make Al Madrigal feel better? Like, he's fine.
It's also insulting.
What the fuck am I going to do for him?
But it's also
That's what
insulting.
I mean. I insulted him.
Yeah. to like to go look at. Like, he's giving you an accurate assessment of what the crowd is given.
It felt like, yeah.
Given to him and his many, many years of stand-up service. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, I get it. I literally had this happen to me for my bottom, which was my hour that I did.
Sold out, by the way.
So there's a lot of people there to watch me do bad. So it was.
Wait, what?
It went really not good.
Unji, stop it right now.
Peter.
Color Club sold out?
I'm telling you, it was bad. Peter, do you understand that I didn't even tell you? I didn't tell you how it went.
But you never do.
I would
you
tell
never
you
call me after something or text me after something and you go, oh, it's fucking, it was awesome. I always have to be like, how was it? And you're like, honestly, not bad. Or like, whatever. You know, I have to pull it out of you.
I'm just saying I wouldn't. I'm being very honest with myself. After
you're not being self-flagellating?
No, I am not. It was a rough crowd. Like, other people have said it. It was bizarre.
How many times did you do this hour?
Zero.
No, for this thing, like the Color Club thing. Wasn't it a run?
No, this is one. Just one off.
One night only.
It was like truly a fluke that it even happened. I was supposed to do a half hour, but the person I was supposed to do that half hour with bailed because he got like another gig. And they were going to give up the date. And they were going to, like, well, we can reschedule you for like X amount of months down the road. And I was like, instead of rescheduling, I was like, why? I can just do an hour. And I thought I was just going to kind of dick around and be casual. But then I made the poster right. And all of a sudden it was like a thing. And then it was sold out. And then all of the stuff. And this is like the same week that I started my new medication.
What'd you start?
I started Wellbutrin, Adderall. So in addition to everything. Yeah.
In addition to everything else?
I'm on another med for the bipolar to put me to sleep and keep me regular. But now I got to do this stuff for my ADHD. We'll see. Whatever. I started
okay.
it.
Okay.
It's fine. It is a little... Do you feel racy or you feel chill? I feel chill, but also this is what's weird about the chillness is that I am getting whatever level of dopamine, and I have not felt the push to do comedy live. Like, I don't get jonesy for it.
Because of the weird? Adderall or because of the Wellbutrin?
I don't know. Isn't that weird, though? Like, it's like mind-wise, like, I am getting whatever level. Like, I don't seek it out that way. I don't start jonesing for it. Because I haven't done comedy because I've been, like, on quarantine because I had a, like, COVID exposure in one of my classes. I canceled all my shows this week. So I haven't been on stage in 4 days.
Okay.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time for you. How long after your hour is this? When did you do your hour?
26. So it's like been 2 weeks almost.
2 weeks. Yeah. Okay, so tell me about the hour. How did you structure it and what did you expect? Were you trying to work out your hour, but it's over, it's sold out, so you felt pressure to like...
Yes.
Be... Okay, that's...
And then also, I didn't want to just do 5 10-minute chunks with crowdment. Because I have 5 10-minute chunks of worked, prepared material that I know works, right? But I don't want to do that.
But that is not like a thematic hour.
No.
Okay. So you wanted to do what? So just for me and the audience to like get into kind of the mindset of like what you have and what you were kind of like looking to synthesize.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I was getting there and then I was kind of like synthesizing a bunch of stuff. It was sort of circling like, it was just circling a bunch of things. I never got there. But I mean, I had the material. It was fine. How about this? It was not good irrespective of all of that. It was not good just because I got on and immediately I was not in the pocket. Immediately I was like kind of literally on my heels. I don't know what it was.
Oh,
honestly.
Really?
Like the stage itself felt like really soft because like I felt crazy. And there was also, Peter, this is the thing. This is the lobe. There was a woman in the audience. I'll never forget your face.
Oh no.
She was looking at me like this.
confused.
Like mouth?
Mouth agape.
Agape? Bitch, agape? You paid money to come here. And then yeah,
if your mouth is agape, there better be laughter coming out of it.
Agape.
What the f-
Like, and the squint eyes. Like, it was, and I could not stop staring at her. Like, I was, like, instead of trying to, like, find my pocket and get out of it, yeah. I literally just kept looking at her and I couldn't get out. So I was, like, staring at her, and I couldn't stop staring. And I couldn't stop being like, who the fuck is this bitch? Like, really going in. And I'm directing all of my material straight at her.
To her?
To her. Oh, so she's starting to feel uncomfortable because she can see that I'm like. Like, I'm like,
cracker. You're trying to crack her. Oh, no.
Oh, and she was a cracker. So, like, I am, like, really losing my mind. And at a certain point, like, it's, I've, the show is 45 minutes deep. It's happened. It's fine. Whatever. And I finally look at her. I'm like, why are you here?
Shut the fuck up. 45 minutes in?
I never stopped looking. When I tell you, I finally look at her 45 minutes in, because it's just like crazy to me that there's no moment where this bitch
But you haven't acknowledged her, right?
Like,
you
haven't like
commented. No, but you haven't commented to the rest of the crowd that this bitch is sitting here with her mouth open.
Yeah, no.
Looking at you crazy.
No, I lose my mind, and 45 minutes, I'm like, why are you here?
Oh, my God. Because that feels, it's so out of context, because is she sitting in the front row?
No, she's just very tall.
Oh, okay. But like,
she's like
no one else can see what she's doing.
This is true.
So if I'm watching you, I'm having a good time, and all of a sudden you're asking this bitch, why is she here?
Yes. Okay, no.
No context? You didn't even make a comment? Like, no, bitch, what are you looking at me like that for?
After I said, why are you here? And I'm like, because you don't look like you're having any fun. Like, you look confused. And I was like, you've been confused this entire time. I was like, were you expecting someone else to come out? Like, I was like, were you expecting another show?
Oh, my God. What happened?
She points to her. She's like, my partner, he knows you. She points to this like fucking stupid, like hipstery looking like guy with like blue frames or whatever, you know? And he's like, He's like been peering at me. And I haven't seen, because he's kind of like doing this. Like, he's like, same thing, like just scrutinizing, strangely scrutinizing. And I look at him like, why are you here then? Like, do you know me? And he's like, yeah, I know Max, which is my husband's name.
Oh.
And then there's a pause. I'm like, I guess I couldn't almost hear him, because he said like, yeah, I know Max. And I was like, I didn't even
register then, that he was talking about your husband.
My husband at all. I'm like, what? And He's like, and then there's a beat. I'm like kind of confused. And he's like, yeah, I know you.
This is your friend?
No. He's just
a guy. Oh, you don't
know him? He's a guy that is friends with my husband.
Okay.
And I've met him, I guess, once or twice, right?
Okay.
And it's crazy for him to have said, I know
you. And he brought his wife to your show?
Straight people who call their wives their partner, jail. You need to go to jail. Jail. To call
so
your
45 minutes
you're
in
a heterosexual relationship
you're calling her a
partner that's liberal catfishing.
LLC
that's woke
together, bitch.
That's liberal catfishing. That is woke catfishing, like with the intended purpose of to be like, she's not my wife, she's my partner, really. Yeah. Jail. So
wow, okay, so you acknowledge it.
I did. And then I had no idea who he was. I literally had no idea who the fuck this was. And so, you know, a big pop from that. And like, you know, I riff on that and stuff. But fine. But yeah, that's how it went.
Okay.
It went.
But you did an hour.
I did do it.
How did it feel? Did you feel like the stamina, or did you feel like, oh, yeah, I can do this? Or like, you know, like there's a certain minute marker. Sometimes you're like, God, where am I? Am I almost done? It's usually around like 40 minutes where I'm
45. Yeah, yeah. I was worried about it. I hit 45. I had. Yeah, for sure. I had the girl light me at 45 just so how I would feel. I felt, and I kicked it into gear, and I had.
You finished surprise, strong.
I had a surprising amount of stuff left. I will say, I will say in retrospect, what I should have done is put together 5 10-minute chunks.
Yeah.
As opposed,
and a couple of funny transitions between them.
Yeah, exactly. Some crowd work, like stuff like that. You know, done like a traditional stand-up hour as opposed to kind of like write out a long thing about mental health and like immigration and like women's stuff. Like trying to get to something that is so much more sophisticated than I'm able to do. And I hadn't thought it out enough because I was doing I had the Netflix audition. I had another audition and I wasn't even thinking about this shit.
Yeah,
I wasn't working it. I was supposed to do 20 minutes the night before, and I had to bail because my because of childcare shit. So like, I was just not prepared for this in any way or fashion. And I'm sorry if you came out, but also, why did you suck like that? But it was rough. It was rough. It was rough. I'm sorry. I don't think that anyone felt. I hope no one felt like. Like, do you get your money's
money
worth?
Back?
Yeah. Okay. I hope that no one feels that way because I did 100%. It was funny. It went fine. It was professional. The version of it in
that
my
you
mind.
You wanted it to be. Yeah.
Felt very short. And then also didn't go great as comedy. So, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So what was your top?
I did a set for Don't Tell. Don't Tell has stuff in LA too, right?
Yeah, but they won't get back to me. They don't want me.
You might need to do it in Chicago or in Ohio when you're in the Midwest sometime. But so you get in the system, you know? But I did a Don't Tell set where I did basically 5 new minutes, like never said out loud, like versions of what I had worked in that hour, but like 1, 2, 3 fully new bits, 1 old bit that I revamped, and also crowd worked a new thing. Felt alive. And that was the pocket.
Yes. There you go.
Do you know what I mean? You know when sometimes when you're in the pocket and you're doing 10 and somebody goes, oh, 10 is different than 20. That kind of pocket felt like I could have very easily done 30. Like, just kept pushing.
Yeah.
That sort of pocket. And I had, like, so many people come up to me afterwards. Like, I got, like, drinks bought for me. I had pictures. I had followers on Instagram. Like, it was, like, such an affirming. Okay, how about this? If the hour had not occurred, this would not feel as much of a top to me.
I see.
But in light of the hour, and then I had another headlining set that went very mid.
Mid sets might be worse than complete bombs. Because complete bombs, you're kind of just like, whoa.
Free falling. Like, just like everything is going bad. Like,
and
you don't
like
me.
Leaning into the bad. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Like,
but the mid ones are the even worse because you're kind of like, bitch, I'm giving you a 100. You're giving me 65. You know, there's anachronistic thing between you and the audience sometimes. And, you know, like, it is something where, like, we should never blame the audience. It's always us. But sometimes it's the fucking audience, man. Like, there's something about getting a group of strangers together in one room. If the vibe is a little off, it's just off.
Yeah.
It's just off. And sometimes it's not that they don't like you. It's that they're polite. And that's kind of worse. It's the people who are like enjoying. Maybe that mouth open girl was really enjoying you.
No, she was not. You know, he messaged me after the show.
No way.
Yeah.
The husband? The partner?
Yeah, the partner.
What did he say?
Hey, I'm sorry. Because they had tried to stay afterwards to talk to me. And I could not. I knew that if I talked to them, I would yell. scream that I would like fucking get go in on him. Like, have you ever been to a comedy show before? Why would you come to this one? Are you trying to fucking fuck up my life? Like, who sent you? Sort of energy.
Sit in the fucking back, bitch.
Like,
fucking leave long
your
torso ass bitch.
Yeah, leave your slack jawed wife at home. And so I like intentionally didn't go over, and they lingered for quite some time hoping to talk to me, I'm sure. And I refused to go over there. So then they left, and then he DM'd me to be like, "Hey, we couldn't stick around." So
oh no.
We couldn't stick around. Sorry about that. We really enjoyed ourselves.
I knew. See, I told you.
No, they didn't. That I 100%.
You think they're lying? Lip service.
I almost texted them. I woke up and I saw this message and I looked at my husband. And I was like, "Is this a bridge we can burn?" And.
He was like, "What? Oh, sounds a little Sinophobic." They're white.
I mean, the thing that he sent me, like, we really enjoyed my the draft that I had. Peter was like crazy.
Oh my, I'm glad you stopped yourself. I'm glad the ADHD medication's working.
To help some of my impulse control, because the
Ozempic for your mind, babe.
It's cheating, but what do you? I mean, like, I'm operating at a deficit. Okay, I was gonna send this person was like truly like I would tell you off like it was really crazy about like have you ever enjoyed anything in your life? Have you ever been to a comedy show?
Wow, like truly, you wanted like, to go scorch earth. The next day. So you were like pressed.
Wow. I mean, when I burn a bridge, I'm not doing matches.
Bridge.
I'm throwing
ain't
a
no
bomb.
One going to Terabithia. Yeah. Yeah.
No one's going to Terabithia. Not you, your grandchildren, nobody. Nobody of your bloodline will ever go to Terabithia.
That was my low,
that's why my high is so mid. It's like it's I had a strong set, but it was like, after this, and also I got pulled out, and also there were a lot of like Asian people there that were like really like there was like this is the thing in the audience at my at the hour, very strange. I had there was no cohesion to the audience. It was not one of anything. There was no rhyme or reason. It was kind of felt like. Who brought you here? Why are you here? Are you here for me? Because in the Don't Tell, the people that all stayed, the people that all liked me, my audience, right? Older, like older white ladies, like young, cool, like POC, like whatevers, you know, like gender, fluid, sexuality, all over that. Those are the people that like me. Those are people that came up to me afterwards.
Who's at your hour?
It made no sense. Quiet people.
Damn. Maybe
very bizarre.
Yeah, that is bizarre.
There were no mentally. There were no.
Because they all came for you because it's your hour.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't understand what brought those people out to see me. It was very bizarre. It was very bizarre. So if you came out, thank you very much. I'm sorry that it went like the audience. If you were, because there were people there for me that were loving it and enjoying themselves. Yeah. You know, I got a lot of messages afterwards that were like people that were into it. But when you're an island of laughter in a, it's hard to get it going.
Yeah, it is. Especially if you don't have an opener. Did you go up cold or did you have an opener?
No, I had an opener.
Oh, okay. How did they do? Did they like crack
great,
it out for you?
Great, great. But that was what reminded me of it because Parker tried to do the same thing to me. He was like, that crowd was crazy. And I looked at him and was like, you did great. don't tell me.
I know. That's insulting. Yeah.
I could fucking I fucking
fuck you.
Hear,
you crushed.
I can fucking hear the crush.
Yeah, don't maybe you crushed me. A little too hard, and they're fucking tired, sleeping with their fucking mouth slack jawed open. That's right.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Well, I hope the next week of comedy it fares better. I'm excited for I'm going up to Santa Barbara to do two shows today. One of them is not even a show. It's a open mic, but it's televised on Santa Barbara's local TV station. So that's going to be fun. So I'm going to go do that. And
what? Why?
Why am I doing that?
Yeah.
Because I was booked on a show in Santa Barbara, a paid gig, but I wanted to, because it's Santa Barbara, it's like an hour and a half away, like I wanted to tack on more things so it felt more worth it that I was driving out there.
Sure.
So I'll be doing that first, and then I'll be doing my other show. But anyway, is there anything that's coming up that you're excited about that people should check out? Local shows or stuff?
I am going to be, I don't know, this is going to come out too late for us. This is going to come out too late for me to plug this, but because we have three more, right? But in March, I will be in Iowa. If anyone's out in Iowa, I will be out there for a one-nighter. And then at this like independent
thing. Where in Iowa?
Iowa City? It's Des Moines. It's like a closer, it's closer. It's like 3 hours away. And then, I will also be doing, I will also be in Yeah. I will also be in DC in April. So.
Hell yeah. Where in DC?
I'm doing a Korean American story event. We're going to be at George Washington University. If you want to check it out, it's an incredible.
GW.
Yeah, it's an incredible event. If you're in the DC area, please check it out and support this organization. I'll be emceeing that. But it's in March and April. I don't know when this is going to come out, though. Probably
around March. But stay updated on Eunji's Linktree and all of our socials to be updated on the latest and greatest. If you're in Austin, I'm going to be in Austin 11th through the 15th of March. A movie that
Sundance.
I was in is premiering for South by Southwest. And I'll be doing some shows out there as well as premiering the movie. So if you're around, come watch the movie. It's called A Nice Indian Boy. We have screenings the 12th, 13th, and 14th of March at South by Southwest. That would be really exciting. Anyway, thanks for listening and tune in next week. Bye.
Bye.